originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network. An intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who took Derby 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pradnik come again to beat He's Had Enough.
Raji Baraj aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano. A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm your host, retired jockey Christina McManigal, and I am joining you tonight from our Jimmy John's of Lexington, Kentucky studio. I'd like to thank everyone listening tonight on Sirius 219 XM 201, and also to those of you tuning into our website at horseracingradio.net. A portion of the proceeds from this show go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. The PDJF provides financial assistance to riders who have suffered devastating on-track injuries. If you're able to help, please visit their website at www.pdjf.org. So our guest tonight, he won the Triple Crown this year with Justify, was the regular rider of Arrogate, with whom he won the 2016 Breeders' Cup Classic, the 2017 Dubai World Cup, and the Pegasus World Cup. To add to that already impressive list, he's ridden the likes of Zenyatta, Songbird, Holy Bull, Drosselmeyer, Shared Belief, Azari, just to name a few, and he's won more Breeders' Cup races than anyone, with 26. With 5,484 wins and over $317 million in earnings, it is a pleasure to again welcome jockey Mike Smith to the show. Mike, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
Mike, we had you on the show. You were actually our very first guest on this show. I guess it was about 3 years ago. Time flies when you're having fun. I encourage all of our listeners to go back, go visit our website, horseracingradio.net, to check out that very first episode of Jock Talk. Now, bear with my rookie interviewing skills. In 3 years, I've learned a lot. Mike, would you say the same for yourself? Do you continue to learn as a rider? And would you say you're even better now than you were, say, 3 years ago?
I believe so. I mean, I feel like I do. You know, I think if you ever get to that point, you're probably about time to give it up, I would guess, you know. But, yeah, I think I learn all the time or whatever, you know, some rider that's all of a sudden, you know, gotten hot. And, you know, I just watch what he's doing. And I like to reinvent myself and figure out new things and do new things and try new things. I'm all about it. I would say that I'm certainly a much smarter rider than I was 3 years ago anyway.
Mike, you made obviously headlines this year as you won the Triple Crown with Justify. And up until American Pharoah, we had been in a drought. So it was so nice for racing fans to see that be accomplished yet again in a short matter of time this time around. And doing my research for the show, I kept reading all of these articles talking about how your age, 52 years old, won the Triple Crown, and now when you won the Derby this year, you were the second oldest rider to win the Derby. Does that bother you at all when people kind of focus on your age? I just quite curious. I kept reading all of these articles talking about your age. You're 52, but you're better than ever. Does it bother you at all?
No, actually, it doesn't. Kind of a compliment in some ways. We've been, you know, blessed to have this such a wonderful year, you know, getting the opportunity to ride for Bob and Windstar, China Horse Club, and Starlight, and Head of Plains, the whole group that owned Justify, man. It's been an incredible ride. Hopefully we'll continue to do well and do great together. I feel as good, if not better, than I was probably in my mid to early 40s, to be honest with you. You know, if I've done anything right in my career, it was at a young age, really picked up physical fitness, and it became a way of life for me, and it's a hobby. It's something I really enjoy doing. And matter of fact, I just got back from the gym about 30 minutes ago. So as long as I can continue to work out and feel the way I feel right now, I see no reason I can't go, who knows, 4 or 5 more years.
I love it. Now, what inspired you to focus so much on your physical strength? Obviously, just riding will make you strong, but you work so hard to be so good, so strong. What inspired you?
You know, just wanted to be the best I could possibly be. You know, I thought that, you know, around that time, of course, you know, got a chance to ride with Lafitte Pinkai a little bit and just saw how fit he was and how he really enjoyed, you know, working out and how he thought that it brought longevity to his career. And you know, that was certainly a motivational point, but also just wanting to be better, thinking of maybe that if I could get fitter, stronger than the next guy, that maybe I'd have some sort of an edge, you know. And even if you don't, mentally, I feel like I do, and that's all that really matters, you know, and it makes me feel good. As a matter of fact, I, you know, if I go a few days without getting a chance to work out, I just don't feel quite right. I mean, it really, really makes me feel good mentally. It's a good way of just getting away, clearing the mind, working out, releasing natural endorphins, and just, you know, getting healthy and getting fit as you possibly can. And you know, I can go a week or two without even riding a horse and get on one, and it's like I hadn't even gone, you know, a day, you know, without riding one. I mean, it's amazing when you can get yourself in that kind of shape. And I think now in my, you know, my later part of my career, I think it's really starting to pay off that I did that and I'm still doing that, you know, to this day. And I guess one day when I get tired, I guess it'd be time to call it quits. But right now, I feel amazing, to be honest with you. I still feel I have something to prove. I've always thought that. I think it's what keeps me going. I can't wait to do the next thing. And if it's anything, maybe just to do it all over again would be amazing.
So you can't really say now that you've done it all. You want to go do it again.
Yeah, it's almost like having an incredible meal. You know, you want second. You want to do it all over again. But I really enjoy riding. I truly love being around horses. I love horses, and you know, it's all I've done since I was a kid. And I think I'm having more fun at it right now at this moment than I have maybe throughout my whole career. I mean, there's been moments that have been incredible, but I truly am enjoying what I do right now so much that I can't even think about stopping now.
You've seen the highs and lows of the sport better than anyone. Maybe you had that horrific spill in 98 at Saratoga, broke your back, you were in a body cast for months, and people probably don't think about those really bad moments when they see you in the winner's circle winning the Triple Crown, but you've seen and you've experienced it all. And now at this stage in your life, you kind of pick and choose your spots a little bit more. And is that just to increase your longevity in the sport?
Well, I mean, you know, I don't have to, you know, go out there and ride, you know, anywhere from 1,100 to 12 to 1,300 horses a year like I used to. I mean, when you're riding the right kind and you surround yourself around the right people and you know, you're blessed to ride the talented horses that I've been so blessed to ride, you know, I just try to keep it more quality than quantity nowadays. You know, again, early on in my career, of course, I wanted to be a leading rider and try to be a leading rider in the country. And now I just focus more on you know, young horses that have promise and stake races, you know, to be honest with you. And my agent, Brad Pegram, has just done a tremendous job of doing that. In saying that, you know, now we're getting towards the end of the year. The new year is going to start up, and it's time to kind of start back to work again. So I'll kind of open it up a little more and start riding a whole lot more here coming the next few months, you know, just to try and get, a few more good ones underneath your belt and horses that are going to travel and compete in those types of races, and they'll carry you throughout the year. I mean, I've been so blessed to surround myself around the right people and ride the right kind of horses that I make a really good living just probably riding anywhere from 300 to 400 a year now instead of 1,300. And if I don't have to ride 1,300, well, less wear and tear on the body, I'll certainly be able to last a whole lot longer. As long as I can stay healthy, I'm telling you, I'm as good a shape now as I've ever been, so I can certainly go another 4 or 5 years.
So let's talk about some of those talented horses, Mike. For the first show, we focused a little bit more on the likes of Holy Bull and Zenyatta, but since then, you've ridden the likes of Justify and Arrogate, and so let's talk about that first name I just mentioned, Justify. So Justify was actually ridden by Drayden Van Dyke first out. And I find that interesting because you actually have taken Drayden under your wing and he lived with you for a time. You really showed him the ropes. And so how did that come about that he rode that horse first time out?
Well, he breezes most of them for Bob. So he rides a lot of them. He'll ride, a lot of them first time out, but not necessarily, ride them back. This was a horse that was owned, of course, by Windstar and China Horse Club, who I've had a lot of success with in Starlight. Was actually supposed to maybe ride him the first time, and Bob just went ahead and put Drayden on him since he'd been working so many, and I had McKenzie going at the time. So just in case, he wanted to go ahead and put him on one and see, let him ride him since he had worked him. But the game plan all along was I was going to ride him back after that, so... That was pretty much it.
Yes,
I think that kind of goes anybody who's a young rider. We all work. I used to work a whole lot of horses for a whole lot of people back in the day, And I'd ride them first time and not necessarily get to ride them back. That's just part of growing up and maturing and getting more experience underneath your belt and learning the ropes so that when you're given that opportunity later on in your career, you know what to do with it. You know how to handle it.
You rode Justify second time out in an allowance optional claimer of all things and won by over 6 lengths. Did you know at that time his potential?
Well, we probably knew that before he ever ran, to be honest with you. I mean, he had already come with high remarks, and high marks. And they were already talking about him before he ever ran, especially once he got close to running his first time out. I mean, he was just lighting it up in the morning where you knew that he was certainly extremely talented. You just didn't know how talented until you actually run him. And then until you actually run him around 2 turns to see if he'll get the distance or not. But, yeah, he had already come very highly thought of.
Take us through his campaign, Mike, and the highs that came with that and any nervous moments you felt during that time?
Well, it was short, to be honest with you. I mean, what he was able to achieve in such a short amount of time, I mean, Bob just did a tremendous job of getting this horse ready, not racing it too, getting him ready for something like the Derby, then, of course, on into the Preakness and then a shot for the Triple Crown. I mean, his training job was just phenomenal. What he did to get this horse ready, and every race was exciting for him, and every race he just got better and smarter, and for a horse that was lightly raced to be as talented as he was also extremely intelligent, which really helped. He just didn't make mistakes, and that's what certainly pulled him through the whole thing, the whole campaign. But all the way up until he retired, I still don't think we saw the best of him. I mean, I think there's still room to grow, but, he was sold for so much money for a sire that it just wasn't worth the chance anymore to continue to run him. But, I mean, it was just an amazing, amazing experience, and what he pulled off in such a short amount of time, I think it was like 100-and-something days, he wins the Triple Crown. It's just phenomenal. It's something that probably will never, ever be done again. In that short amount of time, anyway.
describe the race and the setup for the Belmont.
You know, you'd probably think it'd be a nervous wreck going into, you know, the chance to, you know, to win the Triple Crown. But to be honest with you, it was actually totally the opposite. I think if there was ever a moment that of anxiety might have maybe been a little bit during the Preakness, just knowing that if I could pull the Preakness off without too hard a race, he was the kind of horse that could pull the whole thing off. You know, going in the Derby, you're just hoping you can win the Derby to start with. We knew he had the ability, but you certainly hope you have the trip and everything else. And, of course, after he did that, well, like I said, the only part that I thought, okay, this probably is going to be his least favorite racetrack because of the tight turns and everything. He's such a big old horse. Of course, the weather was bad again. There was fog. You couldn't hardly see. You know, I thought the Preakness was the one that if we could pull that off without having too hard of a race, because he ran so hard in the Derby, we needed him to have a race that wasn't so hard on him to be able to pull all three off. I thought all along that Belmont would probably be his favorite racetrack. He'd be able to run in turns a whole lot better. And just thought a lot of him going into the Belmont and knew that, you know, if I could pull the Preakness off, he certainly would have a huge chance of taking the whole thing down, which he did. And very confident going in, but as you well know, you know, anything can happen in a horse race. But I was just so thankful and grateful for the opportunity that we were in and just, you know, win, lose, or draw, man, it's been amazing. You know, we certainly all know how hard it is to win a Triple Crown. So, I mean, if we weren't able to do it, I mean, it wasn't going to be a big disgrace or a big disappointment. I mean, to pull two of them off is just amazing in itself. But I just had this feeling, this sense of cool and calmness and just felt really good about what he was going to do. And, of course, once we left the gate and he jumped as well as he did, we went in that first turn, and then I was able to slow the second quarter down because we went pretty quick the first quarter. And he got into that big, beautiful stride of his and that rhythm. It just all felt too good to lose, and which he didn't. I think we could have went around again, and they would have never gotten by him. I think he would have just, if I really wanted him to, he probably could have dug in a little harder if I needed to be.
I heard Bob Baffert in an interview during that time. And in reference to you, he said that you just keep a good horse from getting beat. I'm assuming he's talking about staying out of a horse's way. Obviously, with 126 pounds or whatever it is on the back of a horse, you're causing some resistance, but you stay out of a horse's way. And is that a learned trait? And how important is that?
Well, it's extremely important, especially once you've got them into a position that you're happy with and you're comfortable with. You know, knowing a horse's cruising speed is very important. Some are faster than the others. Sometimes you'll hinder one if you try and slow one down when you're taking away probably his best asset, which would be his high cruising speed. So just knowing horses and knowing where to put them into a good spot is probably what he meant. And then, yeah, basically being a really good passenger, letting them do what they do best, and that's running. Sometimes run fast, and sometimes it's early, sometimes it's late. It just depends on the style of horse. You know, as you well, Zenyatta was all at the end, and Justify was just so tactical. He was so had such a high cruising speed, and he was comfortable doing it, and he could run a long ways doing it, as you saw. You know, he went a mile and a half doing it, and could have went another quarter of a mile doing it, to be honest with you. So yeah, I mean, that's a compliment for him to say that, and certainly makes me feel good anyway. But yeah, I think a lot of it is just learning how to stay out of one's way and learning how to get into a good rhythm and getting one that's breathing right. Because no matter how good you are, if you don't have them in a happy, comfortable place and they're not breathing right, they're not going to perform to their best ability. And for some odd reason, just kind of have a knack of doing that and being able to get it done, you know.
Jockey Mike Smith joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike, talking about high cruising speed, how about Arrogate? You rode Arrogate in the Travers in 2016, led the way the entire way, 23-46, 110, won by over 13 lengths. Just a remarkable victory. And what kind of a horse was he?
Incredible horse. Numbers-wise, man, all out. He's probably one of the fastest horses that ever ran, to be honest with you. Just incredible. The stride, the ground he could cover, and his stride was just massive. Whenever you could get him into a good, happy, comfortable place, and he could run forever. You know, his only bad races were at Del Mar. For whatever reason, he just didn't like that track. He just couldn't handle it, and it would just really upset him. He'd just pin his ears way back and not even try on it for whatever reason. And even in not trying, he still almost pulled a few big races off there, but he never did run his best race there. But everywhere else, man, he was just phenomenal, man. He was just incredible. You know, he could do it all. If he broke well, he could go to the lead. He could sit right off of him. He could sit mid-pack. He could come from dead last like he did in Dubai. I mean, he was just that good. It was just an incredible horse. Yeah, he'll definitely go down as one of the fastest horses, the top five fastest horses of all time.
He was something else. The Travers, of course, the Breeders' Cup Classic, the Pegasus World Cup, Dubai, as you mentioned, quite the racehorse. Now, which of those victories for you was the most thrilling? Was it Dubai, the way he closed with a rush?
Well, it was certainly thrilling, but you know, it was also some very anxious moments after getting just crushed leaving the gate. I mean, he just got annihilated, almost got knocked down to a stop. How he even stayed up was pretty incredible. But so that was more of a relief afterwards. Whereas the Travers and of course the Classic when he beat California Chrome, that race was just incredible. And then in the Pegasus, he pretty much, you know, once he got into a good spot down there on the rail and was able to work his way out, I mean, it was pretty much over. He literally geared down from the 8-4 of the wire and still won by 4 or 5 lengths. But out of all of them, I would have to say the most exciting one would have to be the Classic. The most incredible race, of course, would have to be the Dubai World Cup because of what he overcame. But he was just a fun horse to have the opportunity, you know, to ride. He was just classy. You just point him in the right direction and you tell him when. You had to help him, of course, out of the gate a little bit because he's such a big horse. You know, you had to help him out of there a little bit. But after that, I mean, when he liked the track and handled it, he was a beast.
Juggy Mike Smith joining me on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike, I'm sure you get this question quite frequently. Justify compared to Arrogate. How do you compare them? Do you compare them? What similar qualities did they have?
None whatsoever. Totally different horses. And I don't compare horses. I mean, Zenyatta would go down as probably the best female I ever rode. Arrogate would be the best older horse I ever rode, Justified by far the best 3-year-old I ever rode. That's just kind of the way it is. But if you ran them together, I couldn't honestly tell you which one of them would win. I mean, no one knows unless they actually did it. You know, it's just hearsay. It doesn't make much sense to even try to, you know, pick one over the other because at their time, they were the best there was in the world, you know.
Mike, we only have a couple minutes left here. I want to talk about this past weekend, Breeders' Cup at Churchill Downs. Was an exciting weekend, of course. We were blessed with good weather. Thankfully, we were all a bit worried about that. Of course, everyone disappointed that Justify had to retire and was not a presence in the Classic. But you rode Marley's Freedom, Abel Tasman, and McKenzie. And I guess a little bit of a disappointing weekend, but what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, it was great racing. My Breeders' Cup, yeah, it was total, pretty much a flop. I mean, just none of them ran very well at all, other than Marley did run well. She got carried out, you know, pretty far. but struggled with the track a little bit as well. I think that if she could have got a hold of it like she did at Saratoga, I think she could have pulled it off, because as much as she struggled with it and got carried out, she still only got beat. You know, she was fourth, maybe beating the link for all of it, if that. But she actually ran well, but, you know, Abel just, for whatever reason, her last two races just didn't care to run anymore. Of course, she's retired. She's going to be a mom now. Maybe that's what she was wanting all along. And McKenzie, you know, I mean, he'd gotten ready for the Pennsylvania Derby, and, you know, he ran such a huge effort in that race. You know, maybe just that with the, having to come back in such short time was just a bit too much. I think Bob will give him some time now and bring him back the way he wants to, and I think that we'll see him come back and do some pretty great things, because I truly believe he's a really talented horse. And I know, of course, he didn't run his race at all the other day for whatever reason. He got into a good spot. They were going a little quick early, but he just never was in it after we headed down the backside, and it wasn't like he ran and got out running. He pretty much just threw the towel in before even the running even really started, to be honest with you. So I look for him to bounce back and have a big year next year. I'm sure praying so. But other than that, getting the chance, you know, to watch a filly like Enable run and a few of the younger horses run, and of course, you know, congratulations to John Sadler, you know, winning the Classic, you know, at Accelerate, and there was some great racing, and it was wonderful watching Enable too. I never got the chance to see her in person run, so that was pretty neat to get a chance to watch her. She's just an incredible mare. So I think it was a very successful Breeders' Cup, although I'd like to have won one and done a little better, but it is what it is. You know, we've been so blessed this year, I can't complain. So hopefully we'll finish the rest of this year out and start the new year out back on track and trying to get in the winner's circle.
Oh, yeah, Mike, you've won more Breeders' Cup races than anyone. No shame in this past weekend, obviously. Now, real quick question before we have to go. Curious, the decision to ride McKenzie over West Coast, was that your decision?
Well, a lot of it was just because the West Coast was retiring. It was going to be his last race that he was running. I still believe there's more upside to McKenzie that we haven't seen yet. And he's going to run all of next year. So I hated that to give him up and someone do well on him, and then I don't get him back for next year. There's a lot of big races coming up. You know, Dubai World Cup. Pegasus might be back a little soon, I'm not sure. But, I mean, and then you have all of next year, and then the Breeders' Cup being back here in his backyard at Santa Anita. You know, you just hated to give up the opportunity to have such a talented horse for all of next year. But, I mean, it was a very difficult decision. Who would ever want to give up a horse like West Coast? I mean, and the only reason was because of that, you know, because, you know, he's retiring, the yellow horse is going to run next year.
Well, Mike, we'll look to see you and McKenzie in the winner's circle next year, as you mentioned. Unfortunately, we are all out of time, but thank you so much for joining us, Mike, and wishing you all the best.
Thank you. I enjoyed talking to you. Hopefully we'll be on again soon, talking about some winners this time.
Love it. Folks, you can check out this show and replays of all of our other shows on the website at horseracingradio.net. Now be sure to join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Christina McManigle, and thank you for listening.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, fifth generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Hi, I'm John Velasquez.
And I'm Julian Lepau. Every jockey knows and accepts the risk of a sport every time they get a leg up on the horse.
Although catastrophic on-track accidents are rare, when they do happen, the lives of the jockeys and their family change forever.
It's up to all of us in racing to support these men and women.
That's why we support the Permanently Disabled Jockey Fund. Since its founding in 2006, the PDJF has disbursed over $8 million to over 75 permanently disabled jockeys.
Over 90 cents out of every dollar donated goes directly to these brave men and women.
They use their monthly stipend to pay bills, hire caretakers, and many other things that make living with a permanent disability just a bit easier.
This is Mike Penna of HRRN. Did you know that the PDJF has no permanent guaranteed funding mechanism and relies entirely on donations from people like you? Please visit the PDJF website at pdjf.org to learn how you can help.
Hi, I'm Ron Turcotte. I support the PDJF. I hope you will too. And I thank you.